Welcome to Recalculating Small Business.
Our next guest is here to tell us about a subject that's concerning us all, especially here in the small business area. As everybody knows, the Senate and the House have each passed new tax plans. They now have to reconcile them. We have author and CPA Tom Wheelwright here to talk about the potential tax plan impacts on small business and what might be happening in the congressional conferences. Tom, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks very much. Great to be on the program.
Tom, tell us first a little bit about your background, which is fairly unique, and before we get into anything else.
Well, I live in Washington, D.C. the last time I had major tax reform, 1986, with the National Tax Office of Ernst & Young. And that was fascinating back then. I've also been an adjunct professor at ASU for 14 years, run my own CPA firm for 25 years, and wrote Tax Your Wealth. Mostly what I do is educate entrepreneurs, small businesses like our listeners here, on how to permanently reduce their taxes.
Well, that's really terrific. Your website, before we go any further?
It is taxfreewealthadvisor.com, taxfreewealthadvisor.com. Thank you.
Can you spell it out for our audience?
I can. It's tax, T-A-X, free, F-R-E-E, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, advisor, A-D-V-I-S-O-R.com.
Well, from here on in, I'm going to turn you over to Dan, because this is an area that he knows well and you know well. So go to it, Dan.
Thank you. And good morning, Tom. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning. So great to be with you.
Yeah. We have two competing bills, House and Senate. Some elements of similarity and some great divergences between the two processes. I think the first question that I would like to ask you, do you think we're going to get a bill?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody wants the corporate tax reform. Nobody's arguing about that. I mean, frankly, if the Democrats were included, they'd probably even vote for the corporate tax reform. It's the rest of it that's, I think, challenging for people, particularly the individual provisions. But in order to pay for the corporate tax reform, you've got to raise the money somewhere.
Tom, I write commentary for a lot of blogs, and I recently wrote a commentary about the tax bill and have been dismayed at the logic or lack thereof in both houses. Both seem to be driven by a static model of revenue neutral, driven by an evaluation done by the Congressional Budget Office. Our economy is anything but static. In fact, you may have seen yesterday where the president says that he thinks it's possible to achieve a 6% growth in GDP. Now, 2 weeks ago, Goldman put out a review for 2018, and they think it's possible that it could be 4% or a little higher, numbers we haven't seen in a long, long time. I often wonder why we use a revenue neutral bias when one of the alternatives is to cut the budget. So I'm still dismayed that we have both houses. Nobody seems to be talking about, I know that's a broad statement, nobody, but do you think there's a possibility that what might come out of this is some budget reductions?
It's interesting. Actually, I was just reading this morning. I know that's on Paul Ryan's list, the budget reduction. And I know that it's quite a bit separate from the tax bill. I don't think it'll be part of the tax bill. You know, the neutrality of tax bills goes way back into the 80s. when the Senate passed, they passed legislation that said that any tax bill had to be revenue neutral. So it's really a function that they decided long ago that they were going to do revenue neutral, and they haven't changed that and probably won't.
But the concern that I have, Tom, is that, excuse me, if you look at our budgets are in deficit. We've got $20 trillion of outstanding debt. Where's the revenue neutral there? Where is the offset? Where is the it didn't happen.
Exactly.
So, you know.
No, it's absolutely true, and that's what happens when you have different rules for different things. So we have, uh-huh. You know, it's like the 1986 Act was revenue neutral, and yet the 1986 Act caused the real estate crisis of 1989, which caused huge federal deficits. So you can say mm-hmm. the bill itself was revenue neutral, but the effects certainly weren't revenue neutral.
Right. So what do you see out of the two branches, the House and the Senate? What do you see? And then I have a very specific question for myself as a small businessman that I know affects a lot of other small businessmen. What do you see that will be positive for small business out of looking at both bills and likely to survive?
Well, I think there's a lot of positive in both bills for small business. I mean, certainly the expensing of all equipment is positive. The reduction in the depreciation lives for real estate is very positive. A lot of small businesses own real estate. That's a huge positive. You know, they eliminated like-kind exchanges, the 1031 exchange for a lot of people, but like for ranchers, for example, they're eliminated, but for real estate, they maintained it. They maintained the carried interest rule as long as you have it for 3 years. For, you know, small businesses that are starting a business, that can be a very important provision. And then even though we're not getting parity, you know, small businesses we think of as being flow-through, because most of us are, and, you know, we go, well, there's not parity with the corporate reduction, and that's true. It's still a reduction, so we're still getting a tax reduction. So that is still positive. Well, you know, people can argue all day long, is it fair? The question is it positive? It's absolutely positive because it's a reduction either on the Senate side in a deduction or on the House side in a lower rate. So I think there's a huge amount of positives for small business in this bill.
Let me ask you a very specific question that I know affects everybody like myself and Don who are – LLCs and or partnerships,
right,
or whatever that is, flow through. I don't know the exact term, but I can tell you what I call it. There appears to be a tax penalty, which I have to pay for being a small business, and it can be quite expensive. It's a supplemental tax that I have to pay because I am a small business, and in my case, I'm a single employee small business, and you know, it costs thousands and thousands of dollars in this tax. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Which provision are you talking about? You're talking about the effect of the flow through rates. Are you talking about the net investment income tax? Which provision are you referring to?
Currently, there is an item on my 1041 or 1040, whatever it is, where I have to pay a tax, an additional tax, because I'm a small business.
Oh, you're talking about the Medicare tax.
Nope. There's another tax. There's too many taxes. I wish I could be more articulate for you, but last year it was over $10,000. It's because I'm self-employed or I have a pass-through entity, I have to pay an additional tax, and I don't know whether that's an additional Social Security tax.
There is that. Well, sure. I mean, if you're organized as a general partnership or you're organized as a sole proprietor, you pay Social Security tax on 100% of the income from your business. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Yep.
But is
There are ways to deal with that. I mean, there are ways to avoid that. So, but you're right. That is there.
So I'm paying a tax, and I'm wondering if I could say this right. When I pay my quarterly taxes, my estimated quarterly taxes, and I'm paying it to the General Treasury. I'm assuming that a portion of that is the Social Security taxes that I would have to pay as an individual.
Absolutely.
And I'm wondering, the corporation, my LLC, is also assessed the employer half of the Social Security taxes.
You do. You pay both sides because you're both the employer and the employee. So you are paying both sides of that tax. Absolutely.
Okay. So that's probably what the taxes I'm talking about. It's my corporate Social Security tax. So it's in a sense, is it fair to say in that situation, Tom, that my LLC is not a true pass-through because the LLC has a tax liability because it is an LLC?
Well, no, it is a true pass-through. So in other words, whether you were an LLC or you were a sole proprietor, you would pay the same amount of Social Security tax. So, you're paying all of it. Okay, the LLC pays no tax. You're paying all of it, but you're paying both the employer side and the employee side. So it's really flow through. I mean, it's like extra super duper flow through. You get double tax.
Okay, so let's deal with right now. It's what advice are you giving your clients that they should or shouldn't do between now and the end of the year while we're waiting for this bill to come out?
Well, you know, there are some things that are retroactive, and there are some things that, because they're not retroactive, effectively you have some opportunities. So, for example, if you live on the coasts and you've got a state income, an estimated tax payment for your state due in January, you're going to want to make that now because that's not going to be deductible likely if you make it in January. Same with property taxes. You know, if you can pay your March property tax, okay, or your May property tax now, you're probably going to be better off. So there's that. And then some of the expensing provisions of the new bill come into effect this year, 2017. So if you've been thinking about large capital expenditures anyway, and you're thinking about should I make them, you know, you can make them now and get the tax benefit in 2017. You don't have to wait until tax bill, you know, until next year, you know, to get those benefits. So there are things that you can do. The other thing that you ought to really be looking at is because the corporate rate comes down to 20%, I think every small business has to look at, should we now be not a pass-through? Should we now be a corporation? Should we tax as a corporation because they're so low? If we're not taking all of the money out of our business, if we're reinvesting a lot of the money into our business because we're growing the business, there's a whole new incentive now to be a C corporation, a taxed corporation, instead of a flow through.
But if I'm a small business and I use this, the small business provides most of my income, so then I'm draining a lot of the money out of the corporation. Then if I went to a C corporation, wouldn't I have double taxation on some of that revenue coming out?
You would. What the tax bill, particularly the House bill, does is it effectively brings corporations and flow-throughs to the same tax level if you're at the highest rate. So if you're at a 39.6% rate individually in a flow-through, you would pay 39.6%, but there's 30% of the 30% of that under the House bill that would be taxed at a 25% rate, which effectively brings you to a 32% rate. If you were to be a corporation, you would pay 20%, but then you'd pay an additional 15 to 20% on the 80% that you distribute, and you end up at a 32% rate too. So you actually end up with parity between the two. So you're right. If you distribute most of your income, you're probably still better off being a flow through.
Yeah. It seems to me that looking at the provisions in both sets of bills, you said some of the provisions are retroactive. Are there a couple of things that that you can tell our audience that you think you got to do this or don't do that? Something that they can look at their business. I mean, you talked about the changing in the depreciation schedule for both real estate and the expensing of plant and equipment. Is that retroactive or is that going to affect next year?
It is. Well, the depreciation, I believe, goes into effect next year, but the expensing increases go into effect this year. So I think there are a couple of things. I mean, for one thing, make your state estimated tax payment in December, okay? That's an absolute must. You must make it this year because you may not even get it next year. It's not just timing this time. Another thing that really you ought to be looking at is, you know, a lot of businesses wonder, should I own real estate? Well, if you ever were wondering, this would be a time that you would really add in the tax consequences to that because they can be significant to owning your building instead of renting your building. A lot of tax benefits in real estate in this bill. So that's another thing I'd be looking at for sure.
One of the things that we should talk a little bit about is how our pension plans affected, if any, by the law?
You know, they're really not. I mean, we thought they were going to be. It looked like they were going to affect 401k plans and that they were going to have some restrictions there. And the one thing that they're doing is, and here's something that you might want to consider, is that they are going to restrict the rollover from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA. So if you're considering that, this is something you ought to sit down with your tax advisor before the end of the year and say, look, should we be looking at this rollover this year instead of waiting, because that rollover is going away in both bills.
So there will be no provision to roll from a regular IRA to a Roth, assuming that the bills pass in going
That's
forward in 2018?
That's correct.
Wow. So that's off the table.
It is.
Any other surprises?
I actually think there's going to be a lot of surprises. The Senate bill is a very odd bill because it's got a lot of details in it. So you really need to look at your industry. I mean, for example, there's special rules for citrus growers. There's special rules for beer importers. There's all sorts of special rules in the Senate bill. So, you know, you got to look at your industry, make sure you talk to your industry, you know, your industry association and find out what's in there, because if you're in one of those industries that's affected, it can be a real plus for you. So I don't think the surprises are going to be necessarily negative. I think some of the surprises people are going to find are going to be positives, because there are some tax benefits in that bill that you can tell that what happened is that Senator Hatch went to each senator and said, what will it take for you to sign off on this bill? And they got little provisions in there. And, you know, it's the Senate that's driving this, not the House. The House has the votes no matter what. The Senate needs every single vote.
Yeah. So how do you feel about Ms. Pelosi's description of the tax bill being Armageddon and we're all going to die?
Well, this is the same person who said, let's pass Obamacare first and then we'll read it.
Yes. We don't know what's in it until after we pass it.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
We're not going to know what's in it until after we pass it. Now we know what's in it. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is eliminating that individual mandate. And the question is whether they'll do anything about the employer mandate, which it doesn't look like they will. So that's another little thing that people haven't been talking about. Is that while you're no longer mandated as an individual to buy insurance, as an employer, if you have over 50 employees, you're still mandated in offering insurance.
Wow. I wasn't aware of that. There's a provision in, going back to retirement plans, there's a provision if you are covered by a SEP IRA, especially if you're a small business, single entrepreneur, there's a provision that allows you to set up, I think the current number is like $53,000, up to 25% of your adjusted or pre-tax income, up to $53,000, which is a huge, huge benefit for a small business that has a SEP IRA. Is that going to stay or is that going to disappear?
Everything I've seen, that's staying. So
wow.
The same's true with solo 401k has the same provision in it. Everything I've seen says it's going to stay.
Is the 401k as generous as the SEP IRA at $53,000?
It is. The solo 401k and the SEP IRA work the same.
Okay. Okay.
Dan, let me jump in here a moment ask our guest to tell us his website again, because I'm getting all sorts of calls that they want to. Tom Wheelwright, tell us your website again.
It is taxfreewealthadvisor.com, taxfreewealthadvisor.com, and it's named after my book, Tax Free Wealth. So if you really want to understand the tax law, Tax Free Wealth, I made it really simple, and it's available everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera.
Well, I've been fascinated by this conversation, so I'm going to turn it right back to you, Dan.
Thank you. Tom, I wanted to move on to the political problem, if that's the I'm not sure that that's the right way to address it, but clearly the tax, as I understand the tax bill, if you live on the coast in New York, New Jersey, California, Massachusetts, very high tax states, there's going to be either elimination of the tax deduction for state income tax or a significant reduction or a cap. Is that going to go through?
For sure. One thing they're looking at, though, is they're going to cap it at $10,000. Whether that means capping it to only be property tax or being a choice of property tax or income tax or sales tax, we don't know that, but it looks for sure that they're going to cap it at $10,000.
Now, there's a discussion about increasing the standard deduction, doubling the standard deduction. And
right.
Some people feel that their analysis is that by increasing the standard deduction, you may take a lot of people who might have been able to deduct mortgage interest or real estate taxes or state taxes, and by doubling the itemized or doubling the standard deduction, you're going to pick up a number of people who will still benefit from the increasing of the doubling of the standard exemption.
Yeah, that's for
sure. They're going to gain something of what they lose.
They are. Now, what people seem to miss is that they also lose their personal exemptions. So if you have, you know, if you have kids under 18, that's made up with the tax credit. But losing those personal exemptions in some cases is going to mean that you're, even though your standard deduction has doubled, you may still end up with a tax increase because of losing the personal exemptions.
I think it's, as I recall, I live in Florida. There is no state income tax, but there is property
right.
tax in the state of Florida. We unlike where Don lives in New Jersey, who has state and maybe even local income tax in addition to federal, plus some of the highest real estate tax rates in the country, those key centers of high taxation, are they going to be really adversely affected by this? I mean, significantly adversely affected or not?
You know, it's possible. I think probably less than people think. And for one reason is that a lot of those people are losing their state tax deduction through the alternative minimum tax now anyway. So because you don't get it for alternative minimum tax purposes, right? So a lot of those people that, you know, get big because they have big state taxes because they're making decent money in their small business, you know, they're losing that benefit anyway. So I don't think it's as big as people might think it is. I actually think that the mortgage interest deduction will have a major effect on the coast because you're going to see a little bit of pressure on property prices. If you reduce the mortgage interest deduction down to a $500,000 cap.
Wow. So that the tax revenue to the states won't be affected. It's just the deductibility of the tax from the for federal purposes, right?
Right. I mean, the argument is that a low tax state like Florida. A no-tax state like Florida or a low-tax state like Arizona, where I am, effectively we're subsidizing those states, okay, because of the state tax deduction. That's the argument. So you're right. I mean, the states themselves aren't affected, but the voters sure are, for sure.
Well, then can I jump in here and ask Tom a question? I'm in New Jersey. And we have the highest property taxes in the nation per capita. And the only way local and state government has really to finance schools is by the property tax. But it, and the headlines have been from the last week that doomsday is upon us because this these bills – will affect affect them. If I heard you correct, you're saying it will probably just reduce the upward desirability price of homes. But I would think it would have to start politicians to reassess how they raise money. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, I think that it might. Now, property taxes, you know, when typically when we get a bond election, we're told that, well, you just have to reduce how much you eat at McDonald's once a week, right? You know, or once a month or something like that. It's not that big a number. I think that what the concern is that if you put pressure on the prices, remember, but the value of those homes is driving the amount of property tax, and so if the value of those homes goes down. The property tax collected goes down, and I think that's a bigger concern, okay, than the actual deduction of the property tax.
No, it's all Greek to me, to quote Shakespeare.
Yeah.
But if I could ask one question, on the whole, do you think the small business has benefited from this change, or? Remain the same or been hurt by these changes, in your opinion?
There's no question there's tremendous benefits to small business in both of these bills through expensing of equipment, through the real estate depreciation deduction, through the reduction in the flow-through tax rate, through the corporate tax rate, because a lot of small businesses do have, you know, our taxes corporations, you know, there's a provision that if you're just starting a small business, there's a provision that if you start it as a corporation, as a C corporation, a taxable corporation, and you sell it after 5 years, there's no tax on the gain. So that's a huge benefit to small business that typically because of the lack of flowing through the losses in the early years and the high tax rate, of the 35% tax rate, when startups have gone, well, no, we're going to start as a flow-through, like a partnership or, you know, an S corporation. We're going to start as a flow-through. Then eventually we may have to be a corporation. But with this new bill, you know, with these new provisions, that's a huge benefit. If you're starting a small business and you're thinking, boy, in 5, 6, 7 years, I'm going to sell this thing, you could actually completely avoid the gain by doing that.
Dan, you get to ask the last question.
Oh, darn, only one. So following what you were just saying there, Tom, if I were an LLC, would I be better off to reincorporate as a C corporation?
You might be, and it's really easy to make the change. In fact, under the law, they're making it really, really easy to make the change. They're putting some transition rules in. They're really trying to make it easy to change to that C corporation under both bills. So I think you'll find that you'll do the analysis, sit down with your advisor, do the analysis, make sure it makes sense for you in the long run. And then I think that, I'm going to reassess every single client and look at, should we be a C corporation, at least for some of the businesses. There's no capital gains at the shareholder level. No capital gains.
Whoa.
Okay. So you can't convert. You've got to start as now there's some planning you can do to, you know, like you say, if you're small enough, you can probably just start new. Right. But if you start as a corporation, not an LLC, but and now it can be an LLC taxed as a corporation. Okay. So you can do that. But if you start as a corporation, then the gains when you sell your stock are not subject to capital gains tax if you hold it for 5 years.
Wow. That was worth the call. Alone.
There you go.
Tom, is it that for companies going forward or for companies backwards as well?
You know, that provision's been in there for a long time. Okay. So this is not that's not what's new. What's new is now there's an additional incentive because we've got such low corporate tax rates. Now you have to say, look, we know that when we start a business, we're going to have losses for the first year or two. We like to use those losses to offset income from our wages, right? Let's say our spouse is not starting a business and he or she has wages, and we'd like to use those losses and get that tax benefit now, which you lose in a corporation. But the long-term benefit now is so good with a 20% tax rate, and then if you do sell, you get no capital gains. I think there's going to be – I mean, I'm certainly going to encourage more of my clients to set up as a C corporation.
Oh, Tom, we're talking with Tom Wheelwright, he's a CPA and author, about the differences in the House Senate versions of the tax bill. We're going to invite Tom back as soon as the bills are reconciled to tell us what's in it. Don't you agree, Dan?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would love to do that.
Please do. Let's stay in touch. And thank you. And tell us once again your website.
It is Tax-Free Wealth, like the book, TaxFreeWealthAdvisor.com, TaxFreeWealthAdvisor.com.
Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
Want to know more about health savings accounts for your company or yourself? Go to 2HSA.com and get a free employer's primer. Health savings accounts are a cost-effective way of offering health care benefits to your employees and yourself. HSAs build retirement funds for your employees, improve morale, and reduce your health care benefit cost. For a free employer guide to HSAs, go to 2HSA.com. That's 2HSA.com.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your featured book. I want to tell you about a recent interview I had with Bob Bethel, a turnaround specialist with lots of success in small business. Bob's new book is Strengthen Your Business, Fail-Proof Strategies for Small Business. He tells us of his life successes and failures that have made him and his clients so successful. Over the years, Bob has brought 77 companies back from the brink and changed them into thriving, profitable businesses. His suggestions are easy to understand and very helpful. One insight struck me was that most companies do not have a plan. The old Chinese proverb says, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there, is true today. Bob Bethel's book, Strengthen Your Business, can be found at Amazon.com or can be ordered at your local bookstore. This has been Dan Perkins with your Recalculating.biz featured book.
Our next guest is Sandra Mansfield. She is, I love this title, Chief Chalk Officer for Chalk of the Town. She's here because along with her partner, they have a unique company we want her to tell our listeners about. Sandra, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm really looking forward to this.
By way of explanation, we saw Sandra's company at a show in New York, an advanced look at the Toy Fair 2018. And when we saw her product, we being my wife and I, we said it had to be on the program. Sandra, tell us why you're Chief Chalk Officer and what your product is.
Sure. our product is, and when I say our, my sister and I started this company, and we developed the product together. And what our product is, it's a T-shirt with a chalkboard area on it where you can draw, you can wear the T-shirt, you can erase the design, and reuse the chalkboard and T-shirt and wear it over and over again. But it's while chalk works on the chalkboard, what is very unique and wonderful about the this product that we invented and wrote a patent for is that you can write on the surface with precise, sharp, brilliantly colored chalk markers. When you write with the chalk markers, after the ink dries, which takes a short time, maybe a minute or two, the ink does not smudge. And so you can go about wearing your shirt with your design on it, and when you're ready to erase it, you can wet a cloth, wipe it, and redraw. Or if you'd like need to wash the shirt, you can throw the shirt in the washing machine, and it'll be ready for your next wear.
Well, how did you come up with this idea, and how long did it take you to develop it?
Well, that's a very good question. My sister and I started making some T-shirts for a vacation area called Fire Island. It's near New York City, where we had spent some parts of summers. And we thought that the T-shirts there weren't so interesting. And we said, you know what, we could design some. My sister, who is a graphic designer, and myself, who is an engineer, got together, came up with some designs, and sold our shirt to this. It's basically a summer community. And the shirts were well received, but the designs were very, very specific for this community. And so in order for us to grow our business, we'd have to find other communities and come up with T-shirts that were relevant for them. And that's a lot of work. It's not really scalable. So we said, gee, what if we were able to change the design? And, you know, it's not that simple. We also saw trends in products, home products with chalkboard surfaces on them. You know, you see gloves and stickers. You see lots of things with chalkboard surfaces on it. So we kind of put all of that together and said, I think we can create a shirt where you can change the design. So while we were selling these products to the Fire Island communities, we were working on developing our T-shirt. And, you know, I would say we worked on it part-time for a year and then ramped up our efforts. And we went to market August of last year. So we're rather new compared to some of the other businesses that you have come talk on this program. We're rather new, but we've you know, very much enjoyed the ride. It's been fascinating and interesting, to say the least.
Well, before we go any further, what's your website?
Oh, sure. It's www.chalk-of-the-town.com. It is a mouthful. But it's there. You can also search on Google under chalkboard T-shirt, and you'll find us, Chalk of the Town. We're the only chalk marker chalkboard T-shirt. I know that because we invented it and we wrote a patent for it.
Okay. I'm going to turn you over to Dan now, because I'm sure he has some questions.
Okay, sure.
I do. If you're the chief chalk officer, is there
chalking
a chief
officer? Yeah.
Is there a chief eraser officer?
I'm probably that too.
Okay.
Chief eraser officer. It's hard to come up with titles when you're a business with two full-time people. How do you come up with the titles? Do I say, chief, financial officer, charge of logistics, in charge of packages, like, how do you divide it up? So I just decided chief chalking officer sounded good.
Okay, so where are you making your shirts?
Well, we get components from some different places, but we compile it all together here. What probably would be helpful for you to understand is how we actually sell our product. Our product is sold in kits right now. It's sold with one T-shirt, one chalk marker, a stencil, and a cloth. And the product is packaged and marketed to be a product for kids as a kit. We also sell colored markers on the side and additional stencils. That said, as we've been selling this product for kids, we've also had such a demand and request for adult versions of the shirt. When I say adult, I mean adult sizes. So we, as we speak this week, we're working on getting adult shirts up on our website and also giving people the opportunity to purchase shirts individually. What we've found is while there's a nice kit that makes a nice gift, with the everything you need to create a shirt, a lot of times families were buying these products and they needed shirts and a few markers, but they didn't need double duty on some of the elements. So we're introducing that this week up on our website.
So does the shirt come in the package with the chalkboard already on it?
Oh, yes. So, yes, absolutely. It's a cotton, 100% cotton T-shirt, and it has, through a patented process, a chalkboard on it. And right now we offer shirts in the shape of a speech bubble or a text box. It sort of looks like a text box on a phone, and also a heart. And we found that those two shapes encompass a lot of needs.
Okay. And what does the package sell for?
The packaged product sells for $28. Again, it includes the T-shirt, a stencil, a chalk marker, a cloth, directions, and some design ideas. But we're going to be offering, like I said, another version where you can buy those pieces deconstructed, so to speak, so that you can buy exactly what you want.
So what have your sales been like?
They've ramped up over time, which is exactly what you want. We're very new. We're selling. One thing that I didn't explain is our product is available in stores. We're in about 150 stores. And like I said, you can also buy our product on the website. And we also have made, we've been making product for some specific corporations and businesses where we'll custom make a chalkboard shape or package a product a certain way. So our product is available in a bunch of different ways, and the mix of sales is changing.
So the stores that you're selling in, any national brands?
Any national stores? No. All the stores that we're in right now are all more sort of local. Some have multiple locations, in different areas, but not the big department stores, no.
So you and your executive team, have you figured out where this business is going?
We do have some ideas. I'm apprehensive to talk about them in great detail because, believe it or not, there is competition out there, and there are people who are trying to copy elements of what we're doing. So I'm a little bit paranoid, I must admit.
Okay.
But we have learned a lot. We've learned about what works, what doesn't work. We're learning. Social media is so important, and it's so much more important than we ever expected. It's such a great way to connect with customers and interact with them and to really highlight target potential customers. And I have to admit, that's not something I learned about when I went to business school. The internet, I guess it was email at that point, but how to market using Facebook and Instagram, and it was something that I didn't learn. So I'm in the process of trying to learn that through trial and error, trying different promotions, trying to and all this. It's a new world out there. It's fascinating.
Yes.
Fascinating.
So I want to make a suggestion, two suggestions.
Sure.
But I also, as a result of those two suggestions, I want to ask a question. So let me ask the question first. What is your maximum capacity at the moment?
Well, I would say infinity, because I don't own the production facilities, so I can add other production facilities online, like use different – we have a couple different facilities that we've trained to make our product, and, you know, that we've signed agreements with them, you know, with confidentiality and all of that. So I can I guess my capacity would be a function of theirs. But being that there's a number of different businesses, it could be infinite.
So you would you be comfortable of me saying your business is very scalable? You could ratchet up production quickly.
What do you say is quickly?
What happens if tomorrow you got an order for 10,000 shirts?
I could produce that. Give me 6 weeks, and I can deliver.
Okay. And in 6 weeks' time, will the customers have lost interest if you can't supply them inventory for 6 weeks?
And you're talking about a corporate customer?
I'm saying if you're looking at an arrangement where you pick up a broader distribution, and
mm-hmm.
all of a sudden they send you an order tomorrow for 12,000 shirts, and they say, I want it in 3 weeks, what are you going to say to them?
You know what? I've learned that customers that order amounts that large expect a discount, and they, in turn, give you more time to produce. Lots and lots of people in these kinds of businesses, not myself at this point, are producing overseas, so their production lead times are more like 6 months.
Okay.
So it would be unusual in my experience to have a request like that, but possible. Would they lose interest if it was something that they wanted right away? What I found, the people that are interested in our product and get it, it's too bad there isn't a visual with this discussion, because you would – oh, I get it. I see it. When people love this product, they are bought into it. So if that's what I said to them, I'd like to think that they would stick with it. The way that we operate, we try to be very transparent about what we can and can't do. I want happy customers. If they're happy, they'll come back. If we give them what they need, then, you know, they'll ask for more, and they'll, you know, give recommendations to other folks to use us to solve whatever need they're trying to fill.
Do you think that your product, yes, do you think your product is an impulse sale, or is it game-changing?
That's a really good question. Is it an impulse sale, or is it game-changing?
I only get paid for the good ones. I don't get paid for the bad ones.
Yeah, no, you saved it, and then you're like, okay, I'm going to stick that in there. I think it depends on which outlet you're talking about. If you're talking about a retail clothing outlet, I'm going to say impulse. If you're talking about at a camp where someone sees another person using that shirt for field day, and then in the play at camp because they needed a quick prop, and they see it, you know, them wearing it with their BFF, it's not a impulse purchase. It's a, I want that because I want to have that shirt that I can change the design for my birthday, to cheer on my team, for anything else. So I guess it depends on the situation and the person. You know, what one way our t-shirt was used recently that I loved was someone used, they called me up and they asked me up for shirts to wear in Race for the Cure, you know, a fundraising event for breast cancer. And she and her team wore the shirts, and they were able to personalize their shirts instantly. It was relevant because everyone had a different reason why they were walking in this breast cancer walk, you know, for Aunt Tilly or for themselves, or they had something different to say. And so it was really easy for them to personalize it. So when you look at something like that, it's a game changer in that respect.
Are you profitable at the
Dan,
moment?
Can I jump in with a question? Sandra, do you offer all sizes of men and women and children, or just children? How do you handle your SKUs?
That's all a good question. We have inventory in kid sizes, and we, as you're saying, we're just introducing adult. We're just putting adults on our website this week. So kids and adults, and how do we manage it, SKUs? You know, I can see before I did this, and before I had my kids, and when my first job out of college, I worked in management consulting. I'm an industrial engineer, and I worked in sort of operations improvements and stuff like that. And, you know, we work with clients to help them manage SKU proliferation. every time you add another size, color, it can get really out of hand because it's just so much more work. And now I'm living it. So we're trying to manage that. We introduced with two colors. We added a few more colors, but, you know, we've done some analysis to figure out that it's not necessarily adding incremental customers. So we're trying to pull back on some of that. It's so easy to do. I see how it is. You have a customer that really wants X, you offer it, and gets kind of out of control. And there's a lot of costs that are involved in doing that. Did I answer your question?
Back to you, Dan. She's a fascinating study. I love their product.
Yeah. So are you profitable?
Well, we launched 14 months ago. We're running our business to grow. And with that means investing, which means we're reinvesting our profits in inventory and infrastructure, bringing on some different experts in different areas to help us. I think when I was in business school, I think I learned that you don't necessarily have to be profitable day one, but that should be your goal over time. So that's how.
Let me throw you now, after all of this grilling, let me throw you a suggestion.
I'll take it. Go ahead. Yeah.
Go on the web, go to ABC Television, go to Shark Tank, and find out how you get on the show.
If I had a nickel for everyone who suggested that, it's something we're thinking about and we're considering. We're definitely considering that. We see that the product has legs in so many different industries, market segments, industries, kids, adults, and going onto Shark Tank for the pure publicity as well as potentially capital to help fund us to do some of those things would be invaluable. So,
and that's where I disagree with you. Having talked to people who have tried to get on Shark Tank and have been on Shark Tank, the real problem with that is that you sign away a lot of your future profits to be on the show. They require you to guarantee that you'll give up a certain percentage of your company to them.
It seems to me that
Sandra and her sister have a pretty good head on what their business is and seem to be doing a really great job at it. What do you think, Dan?
Well, I'm not suggesting that they're signing away their lives. I'm suggesting that they might want to consider talking to them and find out, based on what I've heard so far, these are not novices. They understand their business. They understand things like SKUs and SKU points, and they understand the profit dynamics of their business. I'm just saying is it might be interesting to see what it could entail. You don't have to sign anything, but you have a unique enough product. The fact that you have a patent on it says a lot about how you have some protection on your uniqueness. So just a something to think about.
Okay. Well, no, Sandra, I guess, where are you located, and who put up your website?
We're located in two cities, actually. This is a good question. I live in New York City. I'm based in New York City, and my sister and business partner is based in Columbus, Ohio. So we...
Go Bucks.
Yeah, go Bucks, exactly. Yes, you'll see lots of Chalk of the Town shirts that with you know, go Bucks on it. yeah. Do you live in Columbus?
Born and raised. I don't live there now, but I was born and raised in Columbus. I am a Buckeye through and through.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Both of my parents went to Ohio State. Yeah, okay. So, wait, what was that?
You're in two different cities. Well, is your main...
Two different cities, yes. We spend a lot of time FaceTiming one another, and we use technology to communicate, which might be interesting to some of your viewers and sort of how we're structured, as well as you asked who put up your website. My sister is a graphic designer, so she is just... She's quick with design, and she designed it, put up the graphics, and we actually use Wix as a backbone. It's sort of an introductory website design and development tool. It's really easy to set up. They make it very easy to change pages, add information, add pictures. You know, like I mentioned, we're putting adult shirts online. Well, it's something that, you know, my sister and I can do for ourselves very easily. I don't have a graphic design background, but I can still manipulate all the tools to get to make the website work. I could use that website to create coupons, share mailings. It's really, really quite powerful.
I absolutely... it again?
Wix, W-I-X.
Ah, yes. We have to get them on the program. You said you have children. Tell us about them. And is your husband involved in the company?
That's all a good question. I have a 12-year-old and a 15-year-old girl, and my sister has a 8-year-old and 10-year-old boy. My daughter, my youngest daughter, is probably more involved in the business than my older daughter or my husband. My younger daughter, you know, is so interested in so many elements of the business. She's helped me at a trade show. She's gone with us to factories and helped create some shirts. She's been to the warehouse. She's probably more involved. She modeled for us a bit. She'll draw for us. You know, my husband has his own businesses. He works in finance. He certainly has helped in an advisory sense at times, especially with financial related things, financial and accounting. But yeah, and I actually, it's more of a family business than you might think. My mom, who is, she's been very, very helpful. She worked in media some, and so she understands target marketing, and she's terrific at the trade shows and terrific with kids. So yeah, we'll become a family business in a different way than you might think. So not my husband exactly, probably, yeah.
So tell us your website again. We're getting to the end of our time together.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's www.chalk-of-the-town.com. Take a look at our website. It lists stores where you can purchase our product or you can purchase online. And you know, visit our Instagram site as well. Take a look at ways other people have used our T-shirts, and you'll really understand the product.
Hmm. Dan, and a final question from you?
No, I wish you... it's a great concept. I've got four grandchildren. I'm going to look at that as a possibility for Christmas. If you grow your business substantially, do you think the price point of your product will come down?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there's economies in production in terms of volume, and in many areas, and there's no question that would be the case here. Plus, we can...
Good.
Okay. That's going to make some of our, yeah.
Thank you for your time.
We've been talking with Sandra Mansfield. She's the chief chalk officer for Chalk of the Town, a really unique product. Thank you, Sandra, so much for being with us.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz,